even though tomorrow is Columbus Day and may or may not be one of those days that you have off from work, everybody knows that the biggest holiday on the near horizon is All Hallows Eve, or as we say now, Halloween. Just based on my observation, it seems like Halloween is getting to be a bigger and bigger deal every year. And by that I mean especially from a commercialization standpoint. When the big box hardware stores devote an entire section up front to Halloween decorations and animated statues and even costumes, well, it means something. I'll tell you what it means. It means there's a dollar to be made. I recently mentioned to Beth that I've noticed that Halloween seems to be giving a lot more emphasis and a lot more decoration and so forth, especially in the stores. But this year it seems to be even bigger than ever before. In fact, Halloween is second only to the Christmas holiday in terms of commercial appeal. In addition to this, or maybe even related to this, it seems like Halloween today has a greater and greater connection to the occult, Satanism and black arts and so forth. More and more scary movies of the past are being remade now. And in fact, both cable and network TV have a number of fresh new horror shows that are coming out about this time of the year. All of this combined together is causing more and more people to ask the question, is it really wholesome for Christians to participate in such things as this? Now, the answer is not really going to be as easy as some folks might think, but I'm glad that people are asking that question because it indicates that more and more of us are thinking more seriously about what a Christian should and should not do. In our lesson tonight, I'd like to try to uncover some facts and examine some reasoning that hopefully will help us to come to a good solution to this dilemma brought on by that question. Is it wholesome for Christians to participate in such things? Let's begin by looking at some of Halloween's origins, and I've put it that way on the screen because, well, honestly, the kind of information you get on Halloween's origin depends largely on who you ask. There are a lot of different answers out there. In fact, I've found some very authoritative sources, at least they claim to be authoritative, that don't really all agree as to how what we now call Halloween really got its start. On the one hand, there are some that are decidedly rabid on the, you might say, the conservative side, who attribute Halloween and its roots purely to demonic practices and behavior. And then there are some on the other extreme who say that the origins of Halloween are really actually wrapped up in Christianity's attempt to turn pagan festivals into something wholesome. And then there are those who are all over the place in the middle. And actually, between those two extremes is where I have found what seems to me to be the greatest amount of historical credibility with a sort of a mixture of those two positions, with the earliest of Halloween's festivals and celebrations being with the Celtic festival of Samhain. That's an old Irish word which means literally summer's end. Dating to the first or second century, Samhain marked the end of the harvest season and the beginning of winter, which was always understood to be the darker part of the year. It was thought that the spirits of the dead revisited their homes at this time of the year, and some say that the wearing of the costumes grew out of a way of imitating and celebrating the visitation of the spirits. There are others, though, who have said that the wearing of the costumes grew out of the desire to keep from being harmed by those visiting spirits of the dead, dressing up so that they hopefully wouldn't recognize you and bring whatever harm it was that they were bringing to you from the grave. In addition to the costumes and the other things such as that, festivals came to include food and bonfires and eventually the making of lamps or lanterns out of turnips hollowed out on the inside with candles placed in there to provide an eerie kind of light for those celebrations and festivals. As some semblance of Christianity began to spread through those pagan areas in about the 800s, the Catholic Church moved its Feast of All Saints or All Saints Day from spring to November the 1st. Some people say that was an effort on the part of the Pope to try to replace the observance of this pagan ritual, Samhain. The night before the church festival of All Saints Day then became known as All Hallows Eve, or as we now say, Halloween. And through the years, the pagan practice of dressing up in a costume to be able to escape the notice or the recognition of the wandering spirits eventually evolved into just another way to celebrate the occasion. And then masked players would go from house to house in the evening, putting on a little simple drama or some kind of musical performance in exchange for some food and drink. Eventually, in the 19th century, when the Scottish and Irish immigrants brought their Halloween traditions to North America, this practice began to turn into an occasion for pranks and mischief. And by 1920, in the United States, this practice of trick-or-treat in an overblown way had grown to unmanageable proportions, with things like overturned outhouses, gates taken off of their hinges, windows of automobiles and houses soaked up completely, and so forth. It is said to overcome this practice, community organizations began to develop the alternative practice of encouraging children to go door to door to receive treats from homeowners and merchants, keeping the troublemakers away. And by the 1930s in the United States, the practice was popular and looked forward to in towns and cities all across the nation. But before the turn of the century, 1900, there was very little known about the practice of whatever was associated with Halloween. Now, from this historical background information that I've been able to piece together, you know, at first it seems kind of like Halloween eventually became just another celebration of good, clean fun. But today, as I've said already, Halloween seems to be leaning back toward some of its more pagan roots. And so the question is now, should Christians participate? Surprisingly to many people, there is biblical precedent for dealing with this particular question. But it comes with a warning. One of the very lively issues among first century Christians was the question of eating meat sacrificed to idols. The scenario would be like this. An animal would be offered as a sacrifice to a pagan idol. After a certain portion of that sacrifice was either burned on the offering or taken by the priest of the temple for his food, then the remainder of that animal, and remember, sometimes we were talking about big animals and no refrigeration, no way to preserve anything, and so the remainder of that animal would be taken to the marketplace and sold as common food. The controversy that then arose was this: is that meat contaminated simply because it had some connection with an idol, and should a Christian abstain from eating that meat, or was it okay? The Apostle Paul answered that question very clearly in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, and the answer, very simply, was no, there was nothing wrong with eating that meat. If one had knowledge, he said, or knows that an idol is nothing, and if his conscience is not offended, then he may eat of that meat. It's certainly not contaminated simply because that animal was at one time associated with idol worship in a pagan temple. However, there is a warning expressed very clearly in verse 9 of 1 Corinthians chapter 8. And here's what Paul says in that verse. He says, "But take care that this liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak." In other words, if one is in an environment where a weak or otherwise immature brother without full knowledge is liable to be damaged, then it would be best to refrain from that instance lest the weak brother's conscience were to be wounded. It was in this context that Paul made that statement in verse 13, "Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again so that I will not cause my brother to stumble." In other words, if doing something that there's really nothing wrong with causes someone who isn't spiritually mature to doubt or to question this matter, then I'll just keep from doing it. In Romans chapter 14, Paul argues the point that there will always be different levels of knowledge among brethren. And he says, to a certain extent, these different levels of knowledge need to be accommodated for the sake of Christian unity. In other words, someone might be convicted to abstain from eating meats. Another person might see nothing at all wrong with the practice of eating meat. Clearly, this is a matter of personal judgment. And in those matters of personal judgment, Paul says we must be very careful not to judge or to condemn one another, Romans 14, verse 13. In other words, we don't need to be making rules for one another to follow in matters of opinion, in matters of judgment. Again, Paul concludes this discussion with a warning concerning conscience in Romans 14, verse 23. But he who doubts is condemned if he eats, because his eating is not from faith, and whatever is not from faith is sin. In other words, whenever we do something without wholeheartedly believing that it is right to do it, in violating our conscience, no matter whether the issue is sinful or wholesome, Paul says we're guilty of sin if we violate our conscience. Now, how in the world does all of this relate to Halloween? I would prefer to make a direct application to us as a congregation of people rather than to each of us as individuals or to families. I wouldn't pretend to be able to conclude that any kind of Halloween activities that your family participates across the board constitutes sin. That's something you've got to sort out. I'm not in a position to make that decision for you. But in the past few years, as a congregation, we've hosted an event known as Trunk or Treat. And it's basically a scaled-down version of trick-or-treating in the very controlled environment of our parking lot. It could easily be seen as this church's sanctioning of our own version of Halloween activities, because there are a lot of clear connections ranging from, some of you guys are good, witches and ghosts and goblins and the decorating and the participants and dressing up as corpses and mummies and demons and scary sounds coming out of the back of your cars and music and so forth. Those kind of things do have a way of emphasizing the paganistic roots of that celebration, or at least as that celebration was at one time. Now, our elders here at Redland Road have decided that it would be best if we didn't provide any ready-made avenue for anybody to make that connection to us through any of our sponsored activities. Now, clearly, as we've looked at 1 Corinthians 8 and Romans chapter 14, we'll all have to agree that the impression that we make is a very, very important consideration. And as I said at the beginning, and I'm sure you've noticed, there is a growing association with Halloween to the occult and to witchcraft and Satanism and those paganistic things that some say are at Halloween's roots. We certainly need to be concerned with that. But again, this is an individual decision that each family has to make, and again, I'm not in a position to tell you how you need to decide that. And if your kids go trick-or-treating, I'm certainly not going to be the one to tell you that that's wrong. But I am saying that as a congregation of the Lord's people, we don't want to give anyone any reason to get the impression that we think that those kind of connections are wholesome. I will tell you that as an alternative to trunk or treat. There are plans in the works for, I'm not sure what it's going to be called, a fall festival of some sort, a little later than Halloween, with a number of fun and very interesting activities that will clearly be an avenue for good, clean, Christian-oriented fun. For many years, I have heard this question debated. And I'm fairly certain that you and I, as God's people, would want to keep from providing anybody with a ready-made way to connect us with something that is even regarded by the world as something that is unwholesome. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.